Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Blast Podcast, a show where we believe movies can be more than just movies. I'm your host, Steve Watts, joined as always by my co-host, Norris's Head Spider. And today, we're bringing you all another movie swap podcast before we dive into the actual movie swap. Ty, what have you watched this week?
Short and sweet. I was on just a heater last week because I was at home. My brother wanted to watch a bunch of movies. We got to watch Invincible. You know, back to my old ways this week. I ended up finishing Bullet Train with my brother. He had a long day of homework, and I had a long day of work. I didn't even see the guy until like 9:30 p.m. He struts down to the basement. He's like, "Hey, we still have a movie to finish." All right, I won't say no to that. Let's rip the rest of Bullet Train. And I was so tired. I didn't think I'd make it. We still had about, it's like an hour and 15 minutes left, and thugged it out because it's a great watch. I have so much fun. There's all these like, it's not even just like the nonlinear storytelling and like, honestly, the really like fun performances. There's all these little quips and bits. Like I love the coming back to the Fiji water bottle and showing the life path of it, leaving the vending machine all the way to the train. Like, do you have like a favorite bit from Bullet Train that you lean on?
I love the Thomas the Tank Engine stickers. Especially the way that it comes around with the diesel is awesome.
Yeah, the Lemon and Tangerine, I think it sucks that they both got killed off. I think they both end up dying in this movie. So from that sense, it sucks we'll never get a spinoff, but I think that would have been a great buddy cop movie to do. This was like an alternate universe. We get a Lemon and Tangerine prequel. Maybe it happens, but love those two.
I think that those two actors, Aaron Taylor-Johnson and Brian Tyree Henry, have just so much chemistry together. They need to do more work.
Unironically, I know that's like the bit that they're twins in this movie, but they actually do pass as brothers. I care about both of them. And when Aaron Taylor-Johnson thinks that BTH is dead, and like, oh gosh, like it brings out not the waterworks, but you get a little choked up. You get a little emotional. Do you think this movie, when ATJ, you know, just all suited up, all classy, got that accent, do you think, like, whoever's, you know, MGM, whoever's doing Bond was like, okay, maybe we give this guy a call? Do you think he's got a shot at it?
I don't know if he's a recognizable enough name. Like, when I think of James Bonds, I think of people who have already been so established, and Taylor Johnson's biggest ever blockbuster hit is probably like 2014's Godzilla, right?
I mean, he's got Kick-Ass.
Yeah, but that was what, 20 years ago?
Yeah. What about I mean, maybe I'm just out of practice, but I didn't know who Daniel Craig was when he got cast as Bond.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'd love to see a Taylor Johnson Bond, but I think that they will go for a more household name. Like, if I went upstairs and talked to my parents and said, like, hey, Aaron Taylor Johnson just got cast as James Bond, they'd say, who?
So who do you think they're going to lean? Do you think they'll actually go the Cavill route? I mean, I know you and I are pulling for something weird, like going Kaluuya or even like Dev Patel. I know he got Monkey Man now, but any notables that you're thinking of?
You know, I've been on a TC kick this week, and I'll get into that during my watches. TC could have been such a fucking awesome Bond. But thinking more logically, I really think that John David Washington has a shot.
Interesting. I like that take. I could see it. He's got the physicality. Can he pull off the accent? He's an American, right?
Yeah, but the Brits take all the American roles. If Tom Holland can be Peter Parker, then JDW can be James Bond.
Cheers. All right, we'll table it. We'll save this for a Bond pod. I love talking about this kind of stuff. But one other watch this week, and it's kind of in tandem with the movie rec that you gave me for this pod. So I don't want to dive too deep into it, but I watched the first Terminator. This is a movie I loved as a kid because it was my first rated R movie. I remember in third grade, I went as Schwarzenegger as the Terminator, and it was a rubber mask. It was half Arnold with the shades and then half Terminator face. And I show up to school, and my third grade teacher asked me, like, is that the Terminator? Yes. Yes, it is. I just saw that movie for the first time. I didn't see it on TV either. Like, I wanted to brag that it was an R-rated movie. My mom was petrified that I sold her out like that. But on rewatch, it's far more dated than I remember. It's still cool. I still respect it a ton. I think Schwarzenegger's great. Michael Biehn, Kyle Reese is awesome. Linda Hamilton as Sarah Connor is great. But I think T2 does everything 10 times better. And it's more prevalent when you go back and watch T1.
You want a quick confession?
No way. You haven't seen T1?
No, I've never seen T2.
What?
I was a big fan of the first one as a kid, but my parents just hated the second one for some reason. It's been on my watch list now for a couple of years, and if you don't mind me taking it away here, I have been like browsing Paramount Plus this week. It is sneakily maybe the best streaming library out there right now.
I don't think that's a crazy take at all. They have been cooking, but you're also on a TC high, and I love TC, so maybe there's some bias from us, but I agree with you.
There could be, but Terminator 2 is recommended every time I open the app, so I think I'm going to have to actually watch maybe all of the Terminators. I think the issue with what happened to me is I saw the first one, and then I went and I saw the Christian Bale one when it hit theaters, and it was just so bad.
That's back when Hollywood really wanted to make Sam Worthington a star, and it just never panned out. They tried so hard, man. But really I will did. Tell you that T2, I have a lot of fear that the child performance is going to drive you crazy. But I think the action and the CGI and the practical effects, it all holds up tremendously. It's just a great action movie. You can see why it's inspired so many others. I can't wait to hear this take. On the Paramount awesome. Plus thing, before you take away the show, I think why Paramount Plus is so great is because it's just a bunch of blast movies. There's a ton of like movies that were great theater watches and are just great for like a crazy soundbar, great TV, and just like an immersive experience. You've got the MI movies, you've got Maverick, you've got T2, all of these event-like movies, and I think they're understanding that.
That's interesting. I'm surprised because a lot of those movies like Mission Impossible for me lose a lot when they're not on the big screen. So I wonder how their model is going. Like I feel like I never have a gauge on if streaming services are succeeding or failing financially. Like I think Netflix has been losing money for the last 15 years.
I mean, apparently they've turned the corner the last year or two. Like they finally won the battle against all of these other streaming sites. But we'll have to do a deep dive because I'm in the same boat. It's like, how do you track performance? Do you measure it by views? Do you measure it by subscription dollars? Do you measure it by ad revenue? We maybe do need to do a deep dive. I know we're pro theaters, but let's try and tap into that, the other side, if you will.
Yeah, I like it. So first watch for me this week was They, and I got suckered into this because I opened up Max, I think, on April 1st when all of the new movies kind of flood into the different streaming services. And in huge letters on the front homepage, it says, Wes Craven presents They. And as I'm watching this, I'm seeing no Craven influence at all. And I start looking at the credits. Craven's nowhere in any role in this movie. He didn't. Apparently, he was an uncredited executive producer, but I mean, how can you do Wes Craven Presents They if he's not involved at all in the credits?
That's about as disgusting as when Warner Brothers probably paid Tom Cruise a gazillion dollars to say The Flash is what Hollywood and theaters needs right now. That's some mischievous marketing they got going on.
It sucked. Absolutely not a blast movie for me. This is a C- blast grade as well. And I think that the issue is it's just frustratingly average the entire time. You know what it kind of reminded me of was the Nightmare on Elm Street remake from like 2010.
With I never know that guy's name, but Rorschach from Watchmen.
Yeah, he plays Freddy. Rooney Mara is the main girl.
No way. That's Rooney Mara?
Yeah.
Wow, it is. I saw that so young. I mean, I think I saw it when I was like 12, 13. So this was pre-seeing Social Network, because she's Social Network, right?
For the first 5 minutes, yeah. She's yes. Ghost Story.
Oh, of course, you're notable. Well, I always look at that movie and just think Casey Affleck.
Yeah. Girl with the Dragon Tattoo as well. Following up, I have one of the greatest theater experiences of my life. And I was heading down to Bloomington on Saturday. Morgan texted me, hey, it looks like Normal Theater is showing The Thing. And I was like, oh, no way. We got to go. So we head out to Normal Theater, and it is pretty much a packed house. This is a Saturday night, I think it was an 8 p.m. showing, and I felt like I was in the 1980s. Normal Theater, for reference, is a gorgeous small theater in Bloomington, that is about 120 years old. And I can't get over just how awesome this experience was. All the trailers were badass. It was a few dollars more, and I'm trying to think of what else they were doing. They were showing The Thing because they're having an Ennio Morricone week, because some movie about his life and work is coming out soon, and it was just so cool. And going in, there were some people that were abuzz. There was one girl on the right side of the theater who was so annoying. She was laughing at the worst parts at first. But in the one scene where they're going to like do the shock back to life on, what's his name? Norris. The stomach opens up, the arms are bitten off, and everybody like screams out loud. Like there were so many people in this theater who had not seen this movie before. And I think that's what made it so special for me.
Is there anything better than watching a movie with someone that hasn't seen the movie yet? You get to experience their reactions for the first time. I mean, that goes for any movie, but a whole crowd that you get to experience that with for a movie that came out in the 80s, that's so cool. And another element too, that is all practical effects. And for it to be believable enough for people to gasp and scream, I think is a testament to how well this movie has aged.
Yes. If it was CGI, it would not have aged as well as seen by my movie swap. But I told Morgan that there was no, like, that it was all practical effects. And she was like, no way. Like, seriously? How are they able to do that? It's so cool when a group of people gets together and appreciates a movie like The Thing. Like, that's just a stellar genre piece that's being remembered 40 years after it was made.
Yeah, I'm kicking myself that I didn't get to be a part of this one. The Thing has been my favorite horror movie forever. I mean, Hereditary has been knocking on the door. I think it's like a 1A, 1B conversation now, but I don't know. I love The Thing. Where does it rank? I mean, you're the Carpenter guy. Is it top 5? Is it top 10? Where does it sit?
Top 10 horror or top 10 Carpenter?
Carpenter.
Let me pull up my rankings real quick, because I know In the Mouth of Madness is number 1, and I'm pretty positive Halloween is number 2. But here we go. John Carpenter. Yeah, The Thing is number 3, tied with They Live and Escape from New York.
Yeah. That's a great, top 5.
Mm-hmm. And cool. I think that this movie could potentially even push it over Halloween. I really want to. I'm pretty sure that Normal Theater shows Halloween every Halloween. If I can make it out there, I think I'd melt.
You got to take me for one of these. I think it's one of my favorite things to do is go see an old movie. It all started during COVID when theaters didn't have anything to show. NCG was showing classics for a buck, and me and my brother would go. I think you and I saw The Dark Knight, took my brother to go see The Matrix. They did Shawshank Redemption. I would love to go see The Thing on the big screen. All of my favorites, you know? Like, dude, if they ever show 12 Angry Men, I will be the only one in the theater. I might be the only one that buys a ticket in the entire United States.
I think so. That's not really one you need to see on the big screen. It's going to be Ty in the theater alone going, oh, they got him.
He's got the pocket knife. Oh my gosh.
Next watch for me this week was Quiet on Set. Not a blast movie, or I guess docuseries. But this was something that I could work well watching. And Morgan was pretty invested in it. It's about the Nickelodeon guy, Dan Schneider, and some of the other mishaps that happened during Dan Schneider's kind of rule over Nickelodeon. A lot of very disturbing stuff, but I think I was very disappointed in the way the documentary was presented.
And from what standpoint? Because I haven't seen it. I think I've seen clips of, is this the one where Drake Bell does interviews?
Yeah, so I think the best way to say this is to just summarize. Like, episode one, you hear a lot of horrible stories about Dan Schneider being a bad boss, very sexist, very demeaning. And then episode two, you find out, well, he hired this pedophile to be working on these children's shows, but he probably didn't know that the pedophile was a pedophile, so like it's hard to hold him accountable. Then episode three, Drake Bell talks through some of the most horrific, disturbing sexual assaults that I've ever heard from another guy who was working at Nickelodeon, who, by the way, after getting released from prison, went and worked on Suite Life of Zack and Cody. Awful.
Oh.
But then the fourth episode and the final episode is back to Dan Schneider just being kind of a creepy boss. And there are a lot of things that he's been accused of online for sure. But the documentary basically just says, yeah, through all our investigations, we weren't able to find any evidence of sexual misconduct by Dan Schneider. And so it's kind of like a lame conclusion to reach. As like gross as that is, but it's not like there's no real payoff of like, this is what we found by looking into all of this.
We took this creep down. It was the opposite. He dodged the bullet.
Right. And so I think that it led up really well through the three episodes, but then dropping back from like the testimonials in episode three are from Drake Bell. And he's like, yeah, I was raped, and it goes into pretty bad, disturbing detail. And then the next episode is like, I really hated Dan Schneider because he was a mean boss. Like, the testimonials aren't even as powerful as they were in episode one, and it really weakens it. And they kind of end off the documentary with I guess that Dan Schneider is kind of the reason that all of these Nickelodeon kids grew up and have so many mental issues. But it doesn't hold up if you look over at Disney and you see just as many stars over there have mental issues. It's like there's something more to be said about just children's stars in general. And I don't think that they were able to add anything to the Dan Schneider conversation that I couldn't have just Googled.
Got it. Just didn't unpack it well enough.
Followed that up with the polar opposite, maybe, which is Tom Cruise's and Steven Spielberg's War of the Worlds. This one was a little disappointing to me. So I got a little bit of backstory on H.G. Wells, the author of War of the Worlds, for you. So when I was in, I think, eighth grade, we had to do a like book a month reading club for my honors English class. And I never wanted to read because I'm me. And I would always look like, what's the least amount of pages I can read while still being up to an advanced enough reading level where they won't question it? And that was basically just classics. So I was reading like Call of the Wild, the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, like all of these like old novels that are literature classics, but like less than 100 pages long. And so that's when I discovered The Time Machine by H.G. Wells. And it is one of my favorite books of all time, I think. And While I have not read War of the Worlds in full, I have read a lot of it, and I've read summaries and breakdowns of it as quite a bit. And so I was expecting the story to go a certain way, and I think that Tom Cruise being so much of a family man and getting like the bright and gleamy happy ending just didn't really sit right with me.
Well, it is a TC movie. He loves to win. So do you think this happens if Tom Cruise isn't the main actor? And does this happen if Spielberg is not the director? Or is this just, is this what the book does, or is it different?
So in the book, it leaves it off as more of a, like, how am I going to be able to process this information that we were just invaded from outer space? And I don't know if you've seen this movie, but it does stay true to the Martians, or the, I think they just leave them as undesignated aliens in this, are defeated by just like germs, earthly germs that they didn't count on. And that stays true, but it's more like, I remember the book leaving off on the main character kind of being just mentally destroyed as like a, holy shit, how, like, and when you think about it, like if aliens did invade the Earth and you somehow survived and you watch so many of your close friends get disintegrated in front of your face, like, how are you going to just move on and hug your ex-wife and be like, yay, we're a happy family again? It's a Steven Spielberg ending. I don't think it's on TC.
I like that take. I like that take. I mean, I'm trying to think of a good apocalypse movie where it is all about where do we go from here. I mean, The Mist is kind of one of those, even though it's like up for interpretation. But I mean, even A Quiet Place 2 gives you the happy ending, I think. And mm-hmm. you don't get that PTSD. It's a good take. I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with a happy ending, but it sounds like it's not true to the source material.
Yeah, and I think the happy ending works. I think it's just a little too like picture perfect.
I hear you. I hear you. Either way, I love TC, so this one's kind of a thumbs up for me.
Moving on, X. This is Ty West's kind of, I guess, masterpiece, in my opinion. I think this is his best film, unless Pearl is. And I mean, I love this. It's not a blast movie, but it's an A blast grade because it is one of the most enjoyable watches like you could possibly have on a Friday night, just sitting around. Morgan wasn't a fan of some of it because there is a lot of, how do I put this? In the movie, one of the characters says that he wants to prove that he can make a good, dirty movie. And I think that I saw somebody, it might have been Stuckman a while back, say this, that's exactly what Ty West proves in this movie. He makes a great, dirty movie. And he does. It works really well. And there are a lot of laugh-out-loud moments in this. It follows that Ty West formula of pretty much an hour of very, very slow build up, like the tiniest of tension, just adding on and on and on to each other before the last 45 minutes is just a complete blow up, like have a great time, summer blockbuster kind of ending. And I'm just such a sucker for that structure.
I mean, it sounds like a layup for me, but is a Ty West movie a Ty movie?
I think this one is. I don't know if you'd like House of the Devil. I don't think you'd like The Innkeepers. I didn't make you watch that, did I?
Nope.
I do think you'd like Pearl, and I considered actually recommending X to you, but I wanted to wait because Maxine, the third movie in this trilogy, is coming out, I think, in the next few months or so. So I figured I would wait, and we could have a discussion on it then. Otherwise, I don't know if he's made a Thai movie. Are you a VHS guy? Do you like those movies?
Yeah, they're fun. They're fun.
Mm-hmm. Then he directed one of the segments in the first one. Otherwise, I would maybe lay off. I think he's more of a me guy. The last 45 minutes of every Ty West movie is a Ty movie. The first hour is a Steve movie. Yeah. Okay. And rounding out the week, I have one of, I think, the most overly hated casting decisions of all time. Tom Cruise's Jack Reacher.
Ooh. I mean, you get it, right? You get it. There's no way you don't.
I think that it's stupid to think that an on-screen character has to exactly match the look of the source material.
Okay, but it is important to note that Jack Reacher is a unit, and TC is, I mean, it's well known. That I love TC. That brother is 5'6", and that's pushing it. I don't know if he embodies Reacher.
I know what you mean, and I've heard a lot of good reviews of the show because they were, and everything is always just saying, oh, they finally got the casting right. Like, he looks like a force. I get, I guess, why people can be upset about that, but I just think it's a stupid argument that you should toss an entire movie away because the character's physical appearance is different than it was in the book. And I've been there in, like, fourth grade when the Percy Jackson movie came out. I was pissed off that Annabeth was Alexandra Daddario instead of a blonde, and like Grover was somehow different. I think it was like his horse hooves were wrong or something. I don't know. I used to get hung up on that stuff, though, is the point. And I just can't imagine how like a grown adult could not look past that.
All right, fair enough. I mean, I like Reacher. It always pops up on TikTok too. I show and movie. When the TC clips pop up, I still watch. Like, but I'm a TC guy, so I'm biased. I'm afraid to even like promote this. It doesn't feel right.
I think that what's his name is very funny in this. Werner Herzog.
Yeah, like that's a good take.
He's in an entirely different movie. And Rosamund Pike also a pleasure to watch anytime she's on screen. She doesn't get enough roles.
Yeah, very, very. Oh gosh, that's another one too. When do you ever see her? I mean, Saltburn. Check. Yeah, you beat me to it. But Gone Girl and Saltburn, just two wackadoos. But she's got some serious chops.
Yeah, I think that if she had a better agent, she's a household name by now. Okay. That was a long week of watches for me compared to a short week of watches for you. Are you ready to dive into this movie swap?
Let's swap up, man. I'm pumped. We can go either way. I think there's some weird similarities with our movies, but they're so vastly different at the same time. I don't know where I want to start. Do you want to have fun or do you want to get a little emotional? It's up to you.
I think Since you went first last time, I can go first this time, if you're all right with that.
Let's play ball.
All right, so the movie I recommended Ty this week was Chopping Mall, which is just the pinnacle of an 80s slasher movie. And I knew this was a Ty movie. I swear to God, I went onto my Letterboxd and I sorted by film length, shortest first. I was like, oh, Chopping Mall, 77 minutes. He's going to love this. Send it over. But why can't we have a 77-minute movie anymore, man? It's so nice.
Nothing better, man. This is like betting the first half spread of a game. You get in, you get out. You win big, and you don't have to worry about the second half. You know, I sit down, and it's not even an hour and a half. I just get to lock in. It feels like a long TV episode.
It does. And I think, like, whenever I watch this movie, I'm just taken back to, God damn, how cool would it be to go to a sold-out showing of this on a Friday night if you're in high school in the 80s?
Totally. Just, movie magic. It's a speed run. It has this 80s charm to it. It's got so much camp. It's got, honestly, I think, fun action. It's just the corniest thing you've ever seen. The premise is ridiculous, and yet such a great time. I enjoyed every single minute of this. From the intro, it's this wonky TV promotion of these robot products. And when the promotional video ends, I'm like, oh, man, was this just like a tease? I hope the rest of the movie is like this. And then I was right. The rest of the movie is exactly like the intro. It's still super wonky. It's about these killer robots in a mall killing people. It's an all-timer. I mean, it's such a goofy premise.
My favorite quote from this movie is two of the characters talking. Ferdy says, "Look, I'm sorry if I made you angry, Linda." Linda responds, "It's not you, Ferdy. I guess I'm just not used to being chased around a mall in the middle of the night by killer robots." How can you get better writing than that?
I mean, I was cracking up. I mean, this is essentially like alternate universe. The Terminator franchise fails and they pivot towards just wonky alternate universes of how Skynet went live. And this is one of them where three robots are programmed to defend a shopping mall overnight and go rogue and kill people inside. And this is how Terminator 3 gets set up.
Which, we were just talking about practical effects in The Thing. In this movie, all of these robots were really built. They're remote control operated, and pretty much everything is practical besides when they are shooting lasers.
Yes, and those lasers and the electric shocks of people, there's a beautiful charm to it. I don't care how shitty it looks, because you get something cheesy like that, and then you get the most, and gorgeous probably isn't the right word, but gorgeous head explosion practical work. It's like, whoa, half the budget just went into that one. That's great.
I watched this with Morgan, and I kid you not, when that happened, she was just like, "What? What kind of movie is this? I thought I had it pegged." Like, it catches you by such a surprise, because that is like such a great effect. I did want to circle back to the beginning though, because this might have my favorite opening credits of all time.
The like Stranger Things-esque like montage of the mall.
Yes, I don't know if I have laughed harder at a movie in the last 5 years than when they like time lapse the people doing little tiny steps into the elevator, and then everybody floods out and there's like a kid with ice cream all over his shirt just standing there like lost. Oh my God, it's awesome.
I also want to shout out the couple that was watching the demo of the robots in the opening scene, and they're and the husband's cracking jokes about like, "Oh, that robot kind of looks like your sister." Like, just Dion Waiters performance from those two. This is just such a great, this is like you said, I mean, this is a layup as far as being a Thai movie.
So I think that the best way to go about this, breaking down this movie, is just asking you a series of questions, because we've talked about the plot already. There are killer robots in a mall, and teenagers are trapped with the killer robots trying to either kill them or get out alive by 6 in the morning. And that's really all that happens. Like, nothing special plot-wise happens in this. It's just a blast to watch. So my first question to you is, which of the teens do you most identify with?
Oh gosh, I have to remember all their names. But gun to my head, I'm probably leaning Ferdy, because he's shy with the girls, total dork, but has a survival instinct. Always the last man standing, even when he gets his ass kicked. I may not fit the bill, but I'm leaning Ferdy.
Interesting. I think I'm Mike. He's the first one to die. He's just an idiot the entire movie, man. Chewing his gum really loud. One of the first scenes you see of him is him walking up to his girlfriend and hitting on her in front of her dad. Like,
those are good too.
That character works so well for me.
I would also go, maybe I'm Allison, in the sense of I pick up on the villain or just my bully with the dumbest tagline or phrase that they use, and then play it right back at him when I win. The "thank you, have a nice day" that the robot repeats after every kill, and Allison comes over the top right at the end and gives the catchphrase right back. I think I would be Allison in that case.
So my next question that leads perfectly into is, what is the best catchphrase of all time? last week we watched In the Mouth of Madness, and in that, you and I were dying laughing at the cop beating up the graffiti artist in the alley and turns around, "You want some too, buddy?" Which is better, "You want some too, buddy?" or "Thank you, have a nice day."
"Thank you, have a nice day" is legitimately the best tagline ever. And I didn't even pick up on it the first kill. And then the second one was like, oh, okay, this is a repeated offense. And then it just becomes a bit the rest of the movie. I wanted you to open the pod with that quote. I think it's awesome. I mean, we laughed more with, "You want some too, buddy?" But this is about as good as it gets from like villain taglines.
So my next question, I the entire time I watched this movie, I keep on thinking about Red Dawn. If this movie is Red Dawn, if communists were killer robots. And I guess my question to you is, which would win in a fight, the group of kids in Red Dawn or the group of kids in the mall?
Oh, come on. Okay, look, this is a funny comp, but give me a break. These six high school students barely survive a three robot attack. Those kids took on the Soviet Union. They took on the entire army. Those Red Dawn kids would smoke these kids.
What if it was the Red Dawn remake with Josh Hutcherson?
No, not Hutcherson. Chris Hemsworth and Josh Peck.
Ah, Josh there Peck. You go.
Yeah, they were brothers. That makes for a better argument. That makes for a better argument. Do we? Oh boy! No. I can't let you trick me out of this. They took on an army. It's Red Dawn. Don't get it twisted.
I don't know, man. I think I could make an argument against the remake. I think the original, you're right. Those kids from Red Dawn probably take out these shopping mall kids without the maulers even seeing them.
I mean, but I am downplaying how OP these robots are. They look small, but they're tiny but mighty. They've got super strength, apparently super speed, even though they look like they're going 2 miles per hour. They got lasers, and they're damn near the Terminator. So they were able to take those down. That is pretty impressive. I will give you that.
All right. And they also don't have the supplies the Red Dawn kids have. But my next question comes down to the writing of this. So we talked a little bit about the dialogue. This entire thing is pretty poorly written. How many lines of coke do you think were snorted during the writing of this movie?
The line is set at like 112 and a half. This movie is unhinged. It's not even just the dialogue. It's just the directing, too. It's actor one, say your line. Okay, cut. Actor two, say your line. Cut. Boob shot. Actor three, say your line. This movie is just, it's unhinged. It's 80s in a bottle. This is poetry.
Is there an argument that this is a perfect movie?
Dude, I almost texted you. This is maybe the best movie of all time. Chopping Mall. And it's only the best because, yes, it's fun. Yes, it's bad. But it's only 77 minutes. I don't even have time to think about it. So if it is bad, it hasn't registered yet.
Oh, man. In and out. They knew what they were doing back in the 80s.
First half money line.
And my last question is, how long do you think it took to write the script? Like, I think this could have been written in one night by, like, if you and me and Jack got together one night and did obscene amounts of coke, I think we could write this movie in 3 hours.
I was going to say like 26 minutes. I think that I think the premise was it came up during, a session, if you will, and someone brainstorms like, oh, wait, I have an idea. Hear me out. The Terminator, but in a shopping mall, except it doesn't look like a Terminator. It looks like the robot from Short Circuit, and we go from there. And then I think that they laid out the premise, and that took, again, like 25 minutes, and then they did all the lines the day they got the set. I don't even think that was all off the cuff. I mean, if you look at those talented actors and actresses, I wouldn't be surprised if they were all just improvising. 70 minutes.
Can you imagine they didn't even know that they were in the movie? Like, hey guys, you're on The Bachelor. Send him to a shopping mall and and put these robots against him. It's so funny, man.
1,000-yard stare after Mike gets smoked.
Ty's got a 1,000-yard stare going on for our listeners at home. You got anything else to add to this? I mean, I just have such a good time every time I watch this movie.
Again, one, thank you for the rec, but two, I think this is a movie I would show to people. I can't believe it. I mean, even if they don't like it, I'm not wasting their time. I mean, that's an episode of TV right there. I mean, this is perfect.
I think it also sets up a fun, interactive viewing experience with that couple that you mentioned at the beginning. Like, they're poking fun at these robots in the first 5 minutes. It makes it fair game for the audience to do the same for the rest of the time.
That's a great take. You can have a lot of fun with this movie. You can watch it however you want. I mean, obviously, you and I appreciate it from an 80s horror, 80s slasher sense, but I think we and a lot of other people can appreciate it from the, wow, this sucks, let's laugh at it sense. So, which is a huge pivot from my swap. I went a different route. I did go 80s. I'm not saying this movie's perfect. It's got some goofy dialogue, some goofy character choices, but very inspiring. It's Vision Quest, a 1985 movie starring Matt Modine. He's Papa from Stranger Things, if you don't know who Matt Modine is. But wow, this movie, man. This has always been one that's like in the Patterson lore. My uncle has deemed this as his Become More movie, the movie that changed him and inspired him. Finally watched it with my dad this week, and I definitely can see why. This was Tyler Patterson in a bottle, for the most part.
I texted you that that Loudon, Matthew Modine's character in this, is literally you. And I think that this fits the mood of this week's movie swap so perfectly.
Yeah, I mean, it's unhinged and goofy, but at the same time, let me lay out the premise for our audience, just in case they haven't seen Vision Quest. In short, this kid, 18-year-old senior in high school, he wrestles at 190 pounds. He's got a starting spot on the varsity team. He has no reason to venture out and try anything else. He's got his spot locked. He's probably going to win state for his weight class, but this is the year he makes his mark. He wants to go for glory. So he sets the precedent that he is going to cut down to 168 pounds to take on the greatest wrestler in the state, the 3-time champion, Brandon Shute, I believe his name is. Mm-hmm. Either way, it's Shute. And the rest of the movie is everyone in Loudon's camp saying, you can't do this, it can't be done, you're going to get hurt, this isn't safe, stop running everywhere, stop dieting the way that you are, come on, have a beer, come out with us. And he sticks to the path because this is the year he makes his mark. Brother, for all of the pods we have done, for all the clowning that you have done on me for acting this way, this movie just made me smile ear to ear. This was so validating that there is a movie like this about someone like this.
You know what it made me think of is, like, have you ever been awake at 2 a.m., you can't sleep, and you're like, fuck it, time to get my life together. And you start, like, putting together all these plans that you never think about again.
That is Loudon Swain for 2 hours.
Yes, exactly. It's awesome. And I'm going to preface that I think this movie would have been a lot better for me if I knew anything about wrestling.
I understand. I'm not a big wrestler, but I just connected with his passion to become something more. I mean, that's something that, you know, that's all I live by. So,
oh yeah.
Let's not even get there yet. I have so many different scenes to unpack that make me like want to run through a brick wall. For starters, let's have some fun. What a great 80s soundtrack. I think there are some bangers here. I've been listening to Only the Young by Journey for the last 4 days. It is so good. But that's just the beginning. Change by John Waite. Do you have a notable scene with a great song? I don't know if you did your homework on the tracks, but
I didn't do the homework on the tracks, but I will say I did recognize that this was an amazing soundtrack. It's very similar to X, believe it or not, has a similar era of music playing in a lot of the scenes, and I will say it elevated it a lot. If you don't mind me sidetracking real quick, I did want to ask you what your thoughts were on the music in Chopping Mall.
Oh, dude, I can't believe we didn't talk about it. I love it. It kind of feels like Carpenter inspired. It's like that techno piano rock kind of thing.
Bum, 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 bum.
It's a banger. It always works. And even Vision Quest has a little hint of that. It's like that. It was an 80s thing, just techno music everywhere. I think in the wrestling scenes, it pops up and I think it works every time. I love it.
I agree. And one thing that did stand out to me about the music that I noted in Vision Quest was, did you notice that the marching band, when they're playing, they are playing like the first motif from Ewok Celebration in Star Wars 6?
I did not catch that. That's really cool.
It's like the da 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 da.
Yo, yeah. No way. Uh-huh. I don't know how you caught that. I missed it. I must have been too glued to Loudon's mission.
But yeah, it's awesome though. I do love the music throughout this entire movie.
Cool. So the floor is yours, man. I have a plan to break down my favorite Become More scenes and then call it a day. So if you have any goofy takes or any stuff you want to talk through, this is the time, because I'm going to go on a run.
All right. I want to start with the dialogue, and maybe it's not the dialogue, maybe it's the directing. The worst scene that stood out to me was the basketball. There's like a 2-second pause between every line where Matthew Modine's just staring at the camera like, yeah, you know, and then he has your jump shot, which is another thing I noted. This guy is you down to your basketball skills. Every time the kid shoots the ball, cuts to the rim, and it's just a fucking brick. It's
awesome. Come on, dude. Eat it. Deep cut. Deep cut. I'm working on my bag. All right. Layup package is developing.
Yeah, jelly. I did think it was cruel to make me watch a movie with Chuck Callahan after I just watched The Thing, because the entire time I was waiting for Coach's head to stretch off. This was awesome, though. He was awesome in this. I did want to shout out the actor who plays the English teacher, Harold Sylvester. I thought was awesome. Like, one of the only parts of this movie that was not at all over the top or goofy. And his performance stood out to me as one where, like, I could see him being a very skilled and famous character actor if he was working today. But obviously that time is kind of come and gone for him.
Completely agree. And there's multiple great scenes with the English teacher. He's the guy he's playing basketball with in the beginning of the movie. Yeah, not much more to be said. I feel he's got a little more subtlety than the rest of the crew. Same without saying sometimes. And that doesn't happen a lot in Vision Quest.
Right. And going along with the serious route, I think that there is a lot to be said about Loudon's like motivating event kind of being like some realization that he's going to die someday and that he needs to live his life the right way or else he's going to look back with regret.
All right. It's time. You're jumping right into what I want to talk about. So this movie, it starts out as just like a high school version of Rocky, and he just wants to win the state title and beat Shoot. But there are hints of something more here, special scenes where there's a great lesson to be learned. And you're talking about the first one that happened for me, and it's when he's in English class and Loudon gets called on to talk about the poem. And Loudon calls out that the poem's talking about this girl watching leaves falling from a tree, and it signals to the girl that one day she will die. And then she realizes that she already is dying. And Loudon calls out that you don't have time to be sad or to not think about it. If you don't think about it, you might go through life thinking you have plenty of time and put off the really important stuff until later. Pretty soon, before you know it, there's no time left. And the question is it better to know that you're dying or not? And Loudon is talking and saying, no, knowing that your time is finite and that one day you will die is an important piece of information to have, because you will put things into action. If you want something to happen, if you want to take down shoot, you can't wait for it to happen. You never know what could happen to you. You never know when your time's up. You got to make the most out of this life you have.
Very, very well put. And I really think that that poem scene is probably the best in the movie. I don't know how you feel about the sports scenes in it. And maybe, again, it's because I'm not really a big wrestling guy. But that scene is where I was like, okay, I'm seeing why Ty recommended this.
We've got the poem scene, and that's beautiful. But I would argue there is another powerful and probably better scene than the poem scene. And that's when he visits his coworker, Elmo, at his apartment. Now, for our listeners that haven't seen this movie, again, please go see this movie. If you haven't seen Vision Quest and you're interested, like, stop now and just put it on. This movie legitimately changed my life. It's really cool. But his coworker, Elmo, he's an older guy, essentially like our dad's age, and they work in the kitchen together. And a lot of the time, Elmo is pushing back on Loudon's journey to become better. Like, hey man, like, all these nosebleeds, like, you're gonna kill yourself trying to do this. Like, it, there's no shame in hanging it up. Or, dude, you look sick right now, just have a hamburger, be a man, eat this burger. And he's constantly pushing him to be like the rest of us. And we're having technical difficulties here. Steve, the how's the poster? Intact?
It's intact, but it did fall off the wall.
We'll be all right. We'll be all right. We'll work through it. Thank you for that. Was perfect timing during my monologue here. But no, I back to Elmo, back to the context. This guy's always pushing Loudon to give up on his dream, that there's no point in doing it. So when Loudon later in the movie feels like hanging it up and not wanting to go wrestle shoot, he goes to work looking to talk to Elmo about it, but Elmo's not there. So he goes to his apartment and he realizes that Elmo has taken the day off. He's not going to get paid for the day, and he's suiting up. He's shaving and he's dressing up in a shirt and tie. And he asks him, like, what are you doing? Why are you getting dressed up? And my God, this story is awesome. And Elmo essentially tells him, like, look, I took the day off and I'm getting suited up here to watch something special. I am an average Joe and I take shortcuts, but you don't. And this doesn't happen a lot. And he gives this great speech about Pele and how great of a soccer player was and how he just captivated honestly, millions of people watching him, average humans. The quote goes, that's right, I start crying because another human being, a species that I happen to belong to, could kick a ball and lift himself and the rest of us sad-ass human beings up to a better place to be, if only for a minute. Let me tell you, kid, it was pretty goddamn glorious. And he goes on to tell Loudon, it's not what you do in the 6 minutes of that wrestling match. Or it's not the 6 minutes, it's what you do in the 6 minutes of that match. Dude, this scene is so good in a goofy 80s like motivational movie. It feels out of place, but it's gorgeous.
So my one question to you about this is, what is your Pelé moment?
Oh, like, what woke me up to, like, be something more, or what do you mean?
Yeah, that and the greatest sports moment you've ever seen that made you realize that those can be more as well.
Alex Smith beating the Saints, 2011 divisional playoff game. It's the greatest playoff game I've ever seen. Alex Smith is more than a game manager, and I was proven right during that game.
Awesome. And what moment woke you up to become more?
There are too many. But I think the one that, like, really locked me into this, like, dork version of me that a lot of people question legitimately was the Batman and that ending monologue about, like, essentially letting go of the past, stop letting vengeance consume you and become more. You know, people need hope. And I remember leaving that movie thinking I need to change why I'm doing this and I need to become more.
Wow. Powerful.
mic drop. And now Vision Quest is just validating all of it. And that's my third become more seen. All of this hard work that Loudon has been going through all movie. He's got nosebleeds because he's low on iron. He's looks frail because he's cut 30 pounds in like a month and a half. He just lost, quote unquote, the love of his life because she's too old and is not interested in being with him. Just so many things going wrong for Loudon in this pursuit of greatness. But he pins the 3-time state champion shoot in the wrestling match. It all paid off. It was so validating to see his sacrifice and his hard work, all of it, his pursuit of glory, pursuit of something more. It worked. Like he got what he was going for. This was the year he was going to make his mark, and he made his mark.
So that's when Blast becomes our full-time job?
Dude, I'm trying to think of what... I mean, Blast is my Vision Quest, but what is pin and shoot? Is it the app launching? Is it making a gazillion dollars? I think we need to sit down and figure out our goals here.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think it might just be it launching. It's been 2 years, man. It's been such a great journey. And as hard as it was sometimes, I think that we are putting out a great product. I'm really excited about this.
I think that's why I recommended this movie, is because, you know, I'm joking about how much it validates my like personal motivations, but with Blast, I mean, this is our Vision Quest. I mean, this is something we've set out to do and have been talking about for years, and it's going to pay off. This thing will be on people's phone by the end of the year.
Hell yeah. My last question for you about Vision Quest is, in waves, when Tyler hurts his shoulder at the wrestling match, is he wrestling against Loudon or Shoot?
I think Loudon, like an absolute tryhard that like notices that he's got a bum shoulder and takes him out. I don't think Shoot's a bad guy here. I just think he's a winner. And
fair.
And I have a side question for you. So you've seen the movie, so you know what Shoot's built like. He looks like the Hulk. How short does he need to be to be 168 pounds? Because, brother, that guy is probably 210 pounds. He's either 5'4", 168, or they're bullshitting. He's 6', like 215.
It seems like when he picks up that guy and just throws him out of the ring, I think that that makes me think that he really is like 6'3", 300 or something. But no, for him to actually be 168, he has to be like 5'2".
he's a munchkin. Shoot is a munchkin, but that's why he wins, I guess, you know.
Loudon, you got something. The arm length. You got the wingspan advantage, man.
He's so compact, you know. That's why he can carry the log up the stairs.
I forgot about that moment. What an interesting workout.
That's why he's a winner. All right, I'm done talking Vision Quest. I'm done talking swaps. This was another fun one. I think that, yes, these are two very different movies, but there's a lot of campiness here, and they're both fun 80s movies. Like, let's shake hands and call it a day.
Hell yeah. I think I am very glad that I watched Vision Quest first off. I do think that it was very worthwhile. And again, anybody listening that wasn't sold by Ty's monologue about either the poem or Pele, then I think I can't imagine how you're not. You got to go check this movie out. It was nowhere on my radar before you said to watch it. So I hope that this inspires at least a couple of people to go and see it on the Roku channel for free with ads.
Or if you want to watch the greatest movie of all time in 70 minutes flat, you can watch Chopping Mall instead. That's another banger for you.
Oh, yeah. Thank you all for listening to this week's episode of the Blast Podcast. Be sure to keep a lookout for some exciting news coming soon from us. To stay up to date on all of our latest content and news, check out our website at blastmovies.net, our Instagram at blast_movies_, and our TikTok at blast.movies. And we will catch you all next week with another episode.